You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to today's show, the first of this new week. Today on the show, we meet journalist and author Teresa Mull, who will be telling us how to woke-proof our lives. That's right. We speak all things woke with Teresa in the next segment. Top of the hour, as always, we will be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you are invited to join us. Feel free to text me your prayer request now on 251-928-2111. The lines are open for you. In the final segment today, we hear the story of an American tourist who met his hero, C.S. Lewis, and how this changed both their lives forever. Sounds interesting? Well, you have to stick around till the final segment to find out more. Okay, with all this good stuff, let's get this show on the road. Hello and welcome to this new week on the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I hope your Monday morning is going as well as all Monday mornings tend to go. It's always a shock coming back from the weekend and back from our blessed Sundays, changing gears, getting back into work mode, school mode, whatever you're doing, wherever you're going, you've got us with you. That's the main thing. It's good to have your company this Monday in the month of July, a month dedicated to the precious blood of our Lord and Savior. So the Hollywood strike continues. Do you remember we discussed it last week? And it continues with no end in sight. I was reading at the weekend about how Hollywood's very so-called anticipated movies like Gladiator 2. I didn't know they were making a second Gladiator. The first one was fine. But I thought, spoiler alert, I thought it sort of ended with a death, which meant no Gladiator 2. But anyway, Hollywood always brings back from the dead. Gladiator 2 has ground to a halt in production in Malta in the middle of the Mediterranean. And believe it or not, the eighth edition of Mission Impossible with the ever-youthful Tom Hanks has also ground to a halt. Will we be able to live without the eighth edition of Mission Impossible? Now, these productions have all ground to a halt across the U.S. and around the globe because, as you know, on Friday, Hollywood's biggest A-listers in the Screen Actors Guild voted to join their striking Writers Guild brethren in a battle against the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. This really is kind of like the movie equivalent of Godzilla versus King Kong. So we've got the studios on one side and we've got the A-listers on the other. So all of these things ground to a halt. Other films ground to a halt, such as Deadpool. Now, I vaguely know something about Deadpool. I haven't seen it, but it was very, very popular when it came out. The second sequel to the very popular one that they produced a few years ago is the production has stopped. But then I went and looked at what Deadpool was about, and it's basically a sort of foul-mouthed, sexually explicit superhero movie for teenagers. So the fact is ground to a halt. I can live with that. Sure you can. Or that Universal's two-part film adaptation of the hit Broadway musical Wicked also went silent at the weekend. Wicked, as you know, is all about gender fluidity and all the usual sexually blah, blah, blah that we're so bored with. I mean, do we really need another musical about sexual awakenings amongst lesbians or whatever it happens to be? I believe that's what the play is about. I've never seen the play. But basically, it's an inversion of The Wizard of Oz into something very 21st century. Very popular here in London, still plays in the West End. And no doubt it was being very popular over there in Broadway. So they wanted to take it to every single city and town across the United States and pollute the mind of your children with that. So that stopped. So that's another bonus, right? And there's a whole host of small screen, because remember, it's not just Hollywood, it's also television that's affected by the strike. So lots of TV productions for the streamers and what have you, that's all ground to a halt as well. Not a bad thing with some of the names that I've seen, some of the subject matter, which was the what was being discussed or what was being promoted might be the better way of describing some of this material that's out there. But also all the late night TV hosts, the Jimmy Fallons, the Stephen Colberts, the Jimmy Kimmels and so on. Well, they've had to also stop. For a start, there's nobody to write their punchlines. Unlike this show where I have to write all my own punchlines. I know I could do with a writer or two, you're probably saying. But anyway, these television A-listers, they need to have people, teams of people often writing all their lines. And that has all stopped as well. Something really interesting is happening, isn't it? It's not just all the productions that are suddenly frozen. But it's like television is shutting down, you know. Everything that mass media in so much of the United States in particular, is beginning to just stop. Now, in all, there are more than 160,000 Hollywood workers represented by the Screen Actors Guild and the Federation of Radio and Television Artists, SAG-AFTRA, I think it calls itself, and the Writers Guild of America. And they all went on strike. The writers went on May 2nd and last week. The screenwriter or actors and performers followed suit. By all accounts, though, certainly looking at the news reports at the weekend, the Hollywood studios and the television studios are really digging in for a long fight. This isn't going to end anytime soon. There's too much at stake for both sides, to be honest. One executive, one movie executive, told a newspaper, quotes, that they will allow things to drag on until union members start losing their apartments and losing their houses. Now, this is because the bigwigs in Hollywood believe that by October, most writers in particular, not the A-list stars, they're okay, but most ordinary people who work in Hollywood, the people who write, the people who do various work on set, the not very well paid people who do the lighting or whatever it is, right? They reckon that in 5 months' time, all of them will have run out of money and they'll all be begging to get back to work. That's the strategy from the studios. So that's the plan, to starve them out, I guess. This is an old trick when it comes to bargaining between labor and capital. It's as old as the hills. But remember, this is all taking place in Hollywood. The same Hollywood that's been preaching to us for about a decade now, if not longer, about how virtuous it is, how woke it is, how, you know, you name it, how it is in Hollywood. Not like us, right? We need re-education. We need to have our values and morals re-altered, re-engineered, changed to fit with the new agenda that Hollywood has been preaching to us for many years. And now we're watching as they're squabbling over basically money. It's not just money, but it's largely about money. That's what these disputes are always about. Now, one press report started with the following. Thankfully for cinemas, Barbie and Oppenheimer have already been completed and are expected to rake in millions of dollars when they hit the box office on July 21st. So at least we can be grateful for that. Barbie and nuclear apocalypse. Oppenheimer was the man who invented the nuclear bomb, and Barbie invented whatever Barbie invented. I have no idea. The whole concept of a logic-free zone, probably. Barbie dolls. I would have thought Barbie dolls would have been sort of outlawed in this age of gender fluidity. I wonder if Ken is still turning up at these. But anyway, you've got Barbie and you've got nuclear Holocaust. Take your pick. That's your offering from Hollywood this summer, by the looks of things. You're welcome to it. Now, you remember last Friday we had on Father Darren from the Catholic Media Missionaries, who works directly in Hollywood and with Hollywood. And you know he was the technical advisor and also little extra role during Nefarious. And we also spoke to the movie directors of Nefarious, Chuck Zonelman and Carrie Solomon. And we asked them about the subject of the current strike. And I think it was Chuck who said that it was, quotes, Hollywood committing a slow motion suicide. Do you remember he said something along those lines? I'd have to go back and get the exact quote. But it was something along the lines of Hollywood committing a sort of a slow motion suicide. Now, Chuck said it in a way which wasn't that he was sad about this. In fact, I think Chuck and Carrie, they were driving in a car at the time. I think they were sort of pumping the air, cheering as Hollywood goes down the drain. So I began to wonder. I was wondering about this at the weekend. I was wondering if this Hollywood strike may, just may, be an answer to a prayer. Think about it. Think about all that we've had to put up with from Hollywood, not just in the last 10 years, 20 years, for about the last 60 years. Since the production code was shot to pieces by the movie from 1967 of Bonnie and Clyde, remember we talked about that on this show, and how it ended certain production values, so that you couldn't show certain things, excesses, explicit stuff on screen. Remember, that was all shot to pieces by Bonnie and Clyde, and then after that, we know what happened. Hollywood went deep dive into the sewer and brought us all with it. Nothing seemed to be beyond the pale. You could show anything on screen. And that's certainly the situation today. But it's more than a production code that is being fought about in today's Hollywood. It's no longer about what movie makers can get past the censor, and more about what Hollywood wants to get past mums and dads and censor their opinions, get right into the minds of children with its worldview of what is right and wrong, acceptable and not acceptable, good and evil. And, spoiler alert, they did not get this using the Bible. Their ideas do not come from Holy Scripture. They come from a very, very different source. So let's have a listen to what one movie star, the wonderful Richard Dreyfuss, what he had to say about all of this in a recent interview. Now, he's talking about cinema as an art form principally. He's not coming at this from a political point of view or a religious point of view. Richard Dreyfuss, I don't think, has much to say on either. He's coming at it purely from an artistic acting point of view. Let's have a listen to Richard Dreyfuss.
Starting in 2024, films will be required to meet new inclusion standards to be eligible for the Academy Awards for Best Picture. They'll have to have a certain percentage of actors or crew from underrepresented racial and ethnic groups. What do you think of these new inclusion standards for films?
They make me vomit.
Why?
Because this is an art form. It's also a form of commerce, and it makes money, but it's an art. And no one should be telling me, as an artist, that I have to give in to the latest, most current idea of what morality is. And what are we risking? Are we really risking hurting people's feelings? You can't legislate that. And you have to let life be life. And I'm sorry, I don't think that there's a minority or a majority in the country that has to be catered to like that. Yeah. You know, Laurence Olivier was the last white actor to play Othello. And he did it in 1965. And he did it in blackface. And he played a black man brilliantly. Am I being told that I will never have a chance to play a black man? Is someone else being told that if they're not Jewish, they shouldn't play The Merchant of Venice? Mm-hmm. Are we crazy? Do we not know that art is art? This is so patronizing. It's so thoughtless.
Okay, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you, Reed. That's Richard Dreyfuss, star of Jaws, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Down and Out in Beverly Hills, Mr. Holland's Opus, the list goes on, Academy Award winner, etc., etc. In fact, I think the film he won the Academy Award for was called The Goodbye Girl. And I think it's Goodbye Mr. Dreyfuss from Hollywood after saying what he said, because what he said was so obvious to the rest of us, but which is heresy here in Hollywood. So during this strike, we can maybe think about Hollywood, and maybe Hollywood can think about itself. Maybe they'll learn to give us a little bit of time off from being preached at. Maybe we can think that more competition in the movie industry mightn't be a bad thing. The likes of Chuck and Carrie doing their thing. Sound of Freedom doing its thing. Maybe this isn't such a bad thing. And these films are not coming from this Hollywood that we've just been talking about. Maybe Hollywood has been its own worst enemy. You ever think of that? I mean, moviegoers want to be entertained. They want to see superheroes that are superheroes, not gender fluid preaching whatever the latest propaganda is. They want to see a Pixar cartoon, which they used to do so wonderfully well, with nice stories and funny characters. The latest Pixar cartoon, gender fluid characters. Come on, who the heck wants to see that? And also, forgetting about the woke agenda, how many sequels do we need? I mean, really, the eighth part of Mission Impossible? That's not a film franchise, that's a television series. It's virtually a soap opera. And then we know all about Hollywood's morals. While they've been preaching to us, the world has been pointing the finger at them. Ever heard of Me Too? And I know AI is behind a lot of this dispute at the moment, but you know what? If Hollywood can do no more than churn out what it's churning out, devoid of creativity and alienating half the audience in the process, you know what? You may as well replace them with AI. At least then they won't embarrass you with scandals about drugs and all the rest of it. They won't be promoting political causes. They'll just be trying to entertain you. Maybe the AI is the answer to this. And you know what? AI works a lot cheaper than some of these stars who go around preaching to us about climate change in their private jets. We're going to watch this one. On this show anyway, we're going to watch it. But maybe a little bit of silence from Hollywood isn't such a bad thing. We won't have to put up with all their expletives that they've been peppering all their films with. You can't go to a film today without that sort of thing. We won't have to listen to their preaching for a while. And they'll also learn what it's like in the real world, where most of us don't know where our next paycheck is coming from. That, my friends, is reality. We're going to watch this. Anyway, We're not in Hollywood, we're in Alabama, and it's a much more sensible place. Now, stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to be expanding this idea, and we're going to be looking at a woman who's going to woke-proof your life. Yes, that's right. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Welcome back to Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Now, just before the break, we spoke about how woke Hollywood had become and how this dented popular support for actors and writers currently on strike, I think it's fair to say. Well, what exactly is woke and just how far has it infiltrated our lives? Well, my next guest has just written a book on how to escape the world of woke. Teresa Mull grew up in Pennsylvania. She received a degree in comparative literature from the University of Dallas and interned for Laura Ingraham at the American Spectator magazine in Washington, D.C. Teresa traded the fast-paced lifestyle of the nation's capitals for the mountains of Idaho, it says here, while still pursuing a career in journalism. And she has pursued a career in journalism. Her writings have appeared in the New York Times, the Baltimore Sun, the Miami Herald, the New York Post, the American Conservative. You get the picture, right? She's everywhere. She's also currently an assistant editor of the Spectator World, as well as policy advisor for education at the Heartland Institute. It says here, in her free time, Teresa enjoys, quotes, in befriending new and colorful characters who make her life rich and interesting. Well, she's come to the right place for that. Teresa is also the author of the soon-to-be-published Woke Proof Your Life, a handbook on escaping modern political madness and shielding yourself and your family by living a more self-sufficient, fulfilling life. And she joins me down the line this morning. Teresa Mull, welcome to the very unwoke Turley Frequency.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Now, when it comes to woke, Teresa, don't you really need to get with the project? I mean, this is the 21st century. Haven't we all moved on from these 19th century values that you're promoting?
Well, many of us have in society, and that is why we see such a rise in mental illness, mental health. We are undergoing a mental health crisis right now. People are more stressed out, more anxious, more obese than they've ever been. Lots of people are on antidepressants. They are addicted to various substances. And we have gotten with the program, with the woke program in many senses, and it's causing us misery. So that's what prompted me to want to write this book. I'm just tired of living in a society that's always seems to be fighting with one another, and I want to restore those values that brought us peace and satisfaction and joy.
And you know, you've got 110% support from this show. Now, you sound to me like a relatively young person, Teresa.
I am relatively young. I'm 34.
That's young. I'm not trying to out a lady's age on the radio, but what I'm trying to say is that it's interesting that you're very much in this fight, because there are people at my age, and I'm at least 20 odd years older than you, where so much of this just seems like ridiculous. It just seems crazy, you know, like when is the punchline coming? But for maybe your generation and younger, this is a sort of existential fight, really, isn't it?
It is. I think, you know, we grew up with so much of this, and I've been describing wokeness, the left and the people who are the architects of woke like to say, like, oh, well, conservatives can't even define what woke is. They can't even put their finger on it. And I think that's on purpose. You know, it's a vague term, but really it's just political correctness on steroids is what I've been saying. You know, there's nothing really new about the woke movement other than how extreme it's gotten, because the principles of it have been simmering for a long time. But yeah, you know, I grew up with textbooks that had kind of like affirmative action, you know, values, quote unquote, if you can call them values in them. And it's kind of been a part of our psyche. You know, it was pretty normal for a lot of people my age to grow up with same-sex marriage and things like that is just kind of part of the culture. So for the older generation, I think it's a little bit more shocking. But for us, we have to choose, you know, is this the future that we want to keep going down? Is this the future we want to leave for our children? And I think we're seeing a lot of even younger people who are a little bit more used to this kind of ideology pushing back because it has gotten so extreme. And we are seeing that the woke experiment is not working.
No, not at all. And we'll explore some of that hopefully in our interview. And I'm very interested in what you're saying about how it's making people basically unhappy. But I think it's important, and you've done it very nicely there to some extent, Teresa, which is to define the term, because it is a term which is bandied around and it's got very little definition from a lot of people. There is a comic side to it, and sometimes we can overplay that, you know, the sort of latest sort of snowflakey type thing that's hitting the headlines. But underneath this, there's something which is much more sinister, which is a kind of groupthink, almost a totalitarian view of how others should behave and think. Would you say that this is the case, that sometimes things which appear like smiley faces and fluffy little names, they're actually sort of veiled, the fist is veiled in this kind of glove?
Yes, absolutely. I write in the book that so many of the woke talking points and the woke agenda are, you know, they use these easy breezy terms that kind of roll off your tongue, like diversity, equity, and inclusion, and social governance, social justice, things that sound nice. And then they give them little initials like DEI, ESG, Black Lives Matter, BLM, you know, so you don't really think about what they are, and they turn into smoke screens. And you look at things like the LGBTQ+, et cetera, movement, and it's rainbows, it's parades, it's fun, it's a big party. But if you look at the fruits of the woke movement and all of these things, it's really not a party at all. It is very sinister. And, you know, they use these nicey terms to trick people into saying, like, how can you argue with love is love, or how can you argue with diversity, equity, and inclusion? Those are all positive things, right? And they are, but that's not what wokeness is bringing about, and that's never been their goal. You know, they use these noble talking points, but then whenever they put them into action, it basically pits people against one another, and it points out our differences, really. You know, diversity, equity, and inclusion is all about your skin color, all about your gender, all about your sexual identity, things that you're born with. And it's pointing out, I'm better than you because my skin color is different. Like, how is that making our world better and nicer? So yeah, a lot of people have been taken in by the wokeness and the talking points and the things that they promote as sounding nice, but they're really not. And I think a lot of people are waking up to that as they become more and more extreme, and they kind of take the gloves off and we see what they're actually really all about.
I'm starting to feel triggered by you, Teresa. You know that.
Oh, no.
I'm identifying as a cat this morning, and I don't think you're respecting me at all.
Oh, no, I am sorry. I didn't even realize that. I'm a dog person, so I'm sorry.
But in all seriousness, I mean, I say that only half jokingly. We had the incident over here in the UK where you probably heard about this. There was a student at a school who identifies as a cat. And one of the pupils kind of rolled her eyes at this. It was a girls' school. And there's audio of the teacher really going at this girl for not respecting this other girl's choice to be a cat. And I mean, the tone of the teacher's voice is frightening, because it's that kind of liberal tyranny, that kind of totalitarianism. How dare you? It was sort of just very, very, very sinister and very, very shocking. This is happening today in schools in the UK, where we have girls identifying as a cat. Now, it went further than that. What happened next was that the girl who complained about or suggested this was ridiculous was removed from the school, and the headmistress apologized and trotted out the words of inclusion, equity, and all of this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Now, this is happening today. The use and misuse of the English language is terrifying. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Words are powerful, and words have meaning for a reason, so that we can, pursue the truth ultimately. You know, that's the point of having definitions and having firm meanings for words. But whenever you can just manipulate those and control what things mean, you have all the power. You know, if you can say a man is a woman and a woman is a man, then you can control everything. You know, control the way people think and what they say and basically the whole world. You're changing reality, not actually, you know, only God can do that. But yeah, you're changing people's perception of reality. And it's really scary. You know, I think a lot of people look at instances like that and kind of scoff and laugh, but it is a reality. You know, that teacher removed that student, that's still going on, and that is becoming reality at that school. And then maybe it'll happen in the next school, and then it'll happen, you know, nationwide, and next thing you know. And that's why I really want people who are not woke to stand up to this. You know, I write in the book, it can be easy to kind of roll your eyes and look the other way and just live your life. But you can't let this stuff take hold, especially whenever there's children involved. You know, it's easy to laugh at that person who's identifying as a cat, and maybe she's doing it for attention. Maybe it's a joke. Maybe it's, you know, a phase she's going through as a teenager. I don't know, but maybe it's mental illness. You know, you live in a world where you're told that a man can breastfeed, and you're like 10 years old or whatever, and you're confused. You know, you're already confused because you're a kid and you're growing up, and the world's a big, scary place. And then you throw wokeness in there with all these things that are just counter reality and counter truth, and it's difficult. And we're going to have a whole generation, if we don't do something quickly, that's going to grow up with serious mental health problems. We're already seeing adults developing that with the woke movement. But yeah, we have to do it for the kids, if nothing else.
Now, Teresa, we could spend our 40 minutes together lamenting, sterile lamentation about how bad the world is. What we're going to do when we come back is we're going to talk about how to woke-proof your life. We're going to look at some of the strategies, some of the solutions that are offered in your latest book about how to not just defend ourselves against this, but also to go and proactively challenge some of this. You're absolutely right about the cats in the schools. Do you know what happened in England? There was an outbreak across England of lots of school kids identifying as cats. Can you believe it? This is real time today here in this country. All I will say, it's going to cost the schools a lot of money in milk if it keeps going like this. Okay, when we come back, we will continue our discussion, a very unwoke discussion, so you've had your trigger warning, with Teresa Mull, who's the author of Woke Proof Your Life, a handbook on escaping modern political madness and shielding yourself and your family by living a more self-sufficient, fulfilling life. Could that title get any longer, I ask myself, Teresa? Back after these words. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency. You're live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Back to the Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I'm in discussion with Teresa Mull, who's just written a book about how to woke-proof your life. Now, before we go on, we better give a trigger warning for anybody who may be upset by our conversation, as it will contain forthright, honest opinions and the correct use of the English language. And if that's all too much for you, well, cat litter's options are available. Teresa, talk to me about how to woke-proof my life. I need it.
Okay. Well, the first thing I advise people in the book is to seek ye first. I am Catholic, and everybody I spoke to in the book, only a handful of them are Catholic. I believe they're all Christian, but I use lots of different resources because I want everyone, I obviously want everyone to be Catholic, but I want everyone, regardless of their denomination, to be woke-proof, at least. That's a good starting point. So I encourage people, to seek out a church community. There's, we can't do anything without God's help. So it's also a great place to find like-minded people who can help you on your journey to woke-proof your life. So put your faith in God first.
You do realize, Teresa, at this point, somebody who's already triggered by what you said, now that you've brought church and God into the discussion, they're probably having to call for an ambulance. You realize that?
Well, perhaps, but what I have also found is that people are so miserable and lost in this woke world, because what wokeness is essentially godlessness. That's how wokeness really is taking hold, is because you see the rise of wokeness is parallel with the rise in godlessness in our country. So as fewer and fewer people believe in God and Christianity, they're empty, and they need to fill up their emptiness with something. And
that's
wokeness
right.
comes along, and it's basically an exaltation of the self. You know, you look at the principles of wokeness, if you can call them principles. They don't seem to be very principled people, but it's all about me. It's all about what can I get from my neighbor, rather than serving one another, rather than looking at one another in the world and thinking, how can I make this place better? You're thinking about, how can I get reparations? How can I get this or that? So it's just attitude of the me, of me.
If you don't mind, Teresa, I'm just going to ask you, I mean, because as you're speaking, something came to mind. Did you in your book have that quote from G.K. Chesterton about when man stops believing about God, he believes in?
Himself, yes, exactly.
Well, yeah, I think it's not that he doesn't believe in God or nothing. He believes in anything. And would you say that there's an element of this kind of woke culture, which is basically that it's not just that they've thrown the baby out with the bathwater, they've thrown their brains out with the bathwater, and they'll pick up any sort of half-baked idea and run with it, that girls can be cats, that men can be women can be men, that we can be whatever we want, we can self-actualize all over the place in whatever form. I mean, it's basically a sort of free-for-all of a madhouse, right?
Yeah, I mean, you see what happens whenever you take God and Christianity out of the picture. It's kind of like the game Jenga, you pull that out and then everything else comes tumbling down, because that's been the linchpin of our society for so many thousands of years now. And once you take that away, people are confused and it turns into chaos. And we see that. You see people identifying as cats, and that seems about as chaotic as I can imagine. So what I say to people who maybe have never had faith, who are skeptical of it, who are mad at God or whatever it is, what do you have to lose? Whatever you're doing now is not working. The psychedelics that you're microdosing on, the food that you're eating to get momentary pleasure, the sexual partners you're having that, are leaving you feeling worse afterward than you were, those things aren't working. So why not give God a chance? Why not go to church? Why not just
Amen.
Say a prayer and see what happens? Yeah. So
sing it, sister.
yeah. So that's the first thing I advise. And I also have a section on education, not just for children.
Well, just before we get there, Teresa, I want to let people engage with you, because I think you've got a lot to say. I think it's very important what you're saying as well. So listen, if you've got a question for Teresa, phone the show, 888-928-0881, or text me and I'll pose your question on 251-928-2111. So we know that God, I mean, you're on a Catholic radio station, so we're 100% behind you on that. Absolutely. Get right with God first and everything else tends to fall into place. But let's move into sort of practical ways in which we can woke-proof our life, Teresa. So, for example, in the realm of education, you got a kid at a public school, the school is pushing its agendas, blah, blah, blah. How do you fight against that?
Well, I highly encourage people, if they can, to look into alternatives for education. I was blessed to go to a Catholic school, which wasn't perfect, and we still, you know, learned some naughty things here and there. You know, it seeps in. It was before wokeness really took hold. But, you know, there's always stuff that we saw or heard from MTV or whatever it is. But my parents did a really good job of protecting me as much as they could and sending me to an environment where we prayed and we learned, you know, scripture and things like that. So it was much more wholesome. So I encourage parents, if they can, to seek out alternative education, to homeschool if you can, to seek out a homeschool co-op, to, if you're able to move to a place that has education choice programs, you can go to a charter school, which is tuition free, but they have a lot more flexibility as far as their curricula goes. So these are your children you're talking about. God gave them to you for a reason, and it is your duty to safeguard them and protect them from woke forces. So I would steer against public schools. You know, they're not all terrible, but they tend to be, of course, more woke. So, but if you have no choice, you know, and you home or public school is your only option, I have a section in there from a mother who is very conservative, traditional Christian woman, and she sends her kid to public school in Seattle. So there's a lot of wokeness going on there, I'm sure, but she assures us that if you are vigilant and you talk to your kids, you pray with them before school, after school, you make sure that you're reading what they're reading, you're seeing what they're seeing, you're not letting them be on social media all day, every day, you are fulfilling the rest of their lives that they're not exposed to the public school system with other good nurturing things, that you can have a woke-proof child, even if you do send them to public school. It's just,
amen.
I think you have to work harder, definitely have to pray, and just stay on top of it. So.
Now, that's the world of school, and that's very interesting. But the world of employment's even worse in some ways, Teresa. I mean, you're talking to somebody who's probably unemployable. Once I get kicked off this radio station, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I think I'll probably empty the trash cans as long as I keep my mouth shut. They'll let me do that. But there's a lot of people like me that have opinions which are just not part of the mainstream. And because we're Christians, we're looked on with a certain degree of suspicion. A number of Christians in the UK have lost their jobs simply by virtue of being Christian. We don't have the same sort of rights protections that you have in the States. And also, Christianity is not such a large body politic over here as it is in the States. So in terms of employment, what do you do? I mean, when you're trying to find employment, are we moving back to something akin to the penal times when Catholics had to work only in certain trades and certain jobs because it just wasn't possible for them to work in the mainstream?
No, I don't think it's that bad quite yet. Definitely Christians are being persecuted at these woke corporations, but I have a section in the book about what to do if you do work at a woke corporation, and I spoke to a man who was he helped co-found an organization called New Founding, and what it is it's kind of like a LinkedIn service, but it connects like-minded, conservative, non-woke, traditional Americans to one another. So it's a network nationwide. Yeah, and you can go on there and you can find employees, you can find employment, you can find advice, you know, local babysitters, things like that. It's really about uniting people who are rejecting this modern woke culture and see it as destructive. And there's a lot more people like that than you think. You know, the woke playbook is to divide, isolate, and conquer. They want you to think that you're the only one. But sure. Statistics show that there's not that many people actually who identify as woke. There are woke corporations and the woke left is obviously very well funded because they sold their souls for money, basically, like Judas. But they're loud, you know, they're well funded and they're loud, and they have the ability to censor non-woke people. So if you go on social media or you go on mainstream media, you would think that you're the only sane non-woke person in the world, but you're really not. They're actually outnumbered. There's more of us than there are of them. So you just have to be able to find that community. And once you do, it's amazing how pretty easy it was to write this book, because once I started talking to one non-woke person, they knew they had five non-woke friends, and they had five more, you know, and it really snowballed. So I would check out New Founding. There's something else. We can talk about this a little bit too. conscientious consuming, I call it. It's the boycotts of these woke corporations. And there's an app called the Public Square app, which again is uniting you with non-woke companies. So that could be another place, you know, to look if you're looking for employment. And then, of course, pray about it. You know, if Christ is putting in your soul this desire to give your time and talent and treasure to a company that is not against your values, you know, that's a good and noble goal to have. And if the Spirit is calling you to that, then I'm 100% confident that He will guide you to noble employment that will help you carry out, you know, use your gifts in a way that is good and moral. So don't forget to pray, and God will provide, and trust Him.
You really are triggering everybody this morning. Now we're talking about prayer as well. I mean, God, prayer, what next? Hell.
Radical.
But in all seriousness, though, Teresa, there's, because you got me thinking, I mean, it's not an original thought, but woke in his current incarnation, his current incantation almost, it's got a particular set of things that it's, you know, gaudy goods that it is, you know, selling to the public. But you've probably thought long and hard about what the real struggle is here, which goes way, way back. I mean, are there instances in the past where this type of phenomena, which is trying to reshape, maybe it's a totalitarianism in the 1930s, which it tries to reshape the world and failed because ultimately good people prevailed? Are there lots of historical precedents for that type of battle and ultimate victory?
Yeah, I mean, people act like wokeness is this crazy new insurmountable force in society, and it does seem pretty crazy and pretty daunting whenever you look out there and you look at all the woke corporations there are and the instances of the cat people, you know. But again, I would say that first of all, I think they are louder, and they do make it seem like they're more powerful than they are, because there are more non-woke people than woke people currently. But then I think back, you know, this is a challenging time to be a Christian and to be a traditional-minded person and to keep up the good fight. But evil has existed forever. It will always exist in a fallen world. And we are called to stand up and be warriors of the faith. And it's almost exciting. But look at, Christians have been persecuted for all time. You know, we're not being fed to lions right now. But whenever I think about wokeness and how hard it is to fight the person, you know, to fight the corporations and not to buy things from Amazon or not to do this and not to do that, that's honestly what I think about. I'm like, you know what? I'm not being fed to lions. So I just keep going.
Teresa, you've gone from God to prayer to being fed to lions and martyrdom. You're starting to trigger me. You know that? I've got a question for you before we run out of time. This is great fun. I'm really enjoying this. But why has wokeness become a religion? Good question.
It's become a religion because these people don't have religion. I wouldn't say it's a religion. I would say it's a substitute for a religion. So as we were talking about, you know, once you take God out of the picture, I trace it back. You know, it is evil, so it's always been around, but more recently to the sexual revolution, where that normalized sex outside of marriage, it normalized homosexuality, it made people basically look at one another as objects, because if you're just using somebody for your own sexual pleasure, you don't value them as made in the image and likeness of God or as having a soul. So that's right. Essentially what wokeness is all about. You know, you're looking at somebody's outward appearance and not their intrinsic value as a creature of God. So whenever you do that, you take out God, and then people start looking at themselves, and it's pretty easy to convince people to exalt themselves. And that's, I also blame social media for the rise of wokeness as well, because that's a lot of what social media is. Of course, social media can be a great good, but it's essentially telling people to say, look at me, and promoting their own how cool they are, or, you know, trying to get likes and things like that. Yeah.
So, sad. It's almost like they're cats looking to be stroked. Another question here for you, Teresa. I think this is a good question. Isn't family dinner an anti-woke opportunity? Getting the family around the dinner table. What a great idea.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's, I have that in the book as well. I have a lot of tips like that that are pretty simple, very easy and doable, but I think we've gotten away from realizing how valuable that is. So I use a lot of statistics in the book that are not, you know, they're from scientists, Harvard professors, things like that, who are acting like they just discovered the wheel, where it's like, did you know that having dinner with your family makes children less likely to be depressed, and it makes teen pregnancy less likely? Yeah, they have all these studies that are oh my goodness.
Teresa?
Yeah.
This is incredible.
Exactly.
Listen, Teresa, we've run out of time. Believe it or not, the clock has beaten us. This has been great fun. I've really enjoyed chatting to you, and I wish you every success with the book. Tell our audience where they can find out more about you, your writing. I know you do a lot of journalism, but also where they can pick up a wonderful copy of Anti-Woke Proof Your Life.
Thank you. Yes, you can purchase the book. It's being published by Sophia Institute Press. So if you go to sophiainstitute.com, you can get it there. It will also be available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, places like that. But Sophia Institute is very not woke, so I would encourage everyone to buy it there, directly from them if you can. And then I write mostly, primarily, at The Spectator World. So that's just thespectator.com, and you can find lots of anti-woke stuff there.
Teresa, it's been great fun speaking to you. Thank you so much for taking time this morning to come and talk to the audience here on Archangel Radio.
Of course. Thanks for having me. So sorry for triggering you.
It's okay. I'm going off for a quick lie down and a plate of milk, and I'll be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Teresa. Listen, when we come back, no time for milk and lying down. I'm going to be praying the divine mercy with you. Stay tuned to the Charlie Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.